Welcome to the Inner Ho Uprising, the podcast about sex, love, and dating from the perspective of me, Sam, one black, non-monogamous, pansexual, feminist ho living in New York City, and my pronouns are she and her.
Yes, and me, Rodeca, my pronouns are she and her, and I am a fat, black, pansexual whose life is a series of coincidences that somehow landed her here.
Nice. On this show, we have two types of episodes. They are group episodes and interview episodes. On interview episodes, I, Sam, the principal host of this here show, and one of my rotating co-hosts talk to folks with insightful perspectives on sex, love, dating, gender, and or race. And on group episodes, all the hosts come together to chat about sexual current events in the world, our lives, and yours. This episode is an interview episode, and it's a part of our Ability April month. So for the rest of April, we're going to be talking to folks with chronic illnesses, diseases, and disability, and how their sex, love, and dating lives are affected by living with these conditions.
On this episode, we'll be talking about living with a chronic STI, specifically herpes HSV2, with our guest writer and outspoken anti-stigma advocate, Rukaya. A fun fact about, well, I don't know, depends on your definition of fun, but a fun fact to get us started, 90% of people worldwide actually have some strain of herpes. Most common is HSV1 or HSV2, and nearly 75% of the U.S. population currently hosts at least one herpes simplex virus, which is what HSV stands for.
Yes. That's cool, man. We all got herpes.
Pretty much.
More fun facts to come later, and also the interview to come later. But before we get into that, we'll do a couple of short segments.
And they are Bae of the Week,
where we talk about people who we find attractive.
Ho of the Week,
where we shout out you guys, the homies, the listeners, and the fans.
And Self-Care Tip of the Week,
where we give you all some advice on how to take care of yourselves.
And if you would like to follow along with the conversation had in this podcast on social media, you can do so by using the hashtag InnerHoUprising so we can see it in the hashtag pod in so other people can see us.
Mm-hmm. And if you want to pay us to speak at your school or conference about sex positivity, black feminism, or other kinds of topics that we discuss on this here show, we would love to do so. So please, to book us, send us a line to ihupodcast@gmail.com. I know the school year is ending, but that means that another school year is going to be beginning yep. pretty soon. So if you want to have us talk at your school for the new semester in August, let's start talking now, guys.
Yeah.
Cool. Let's go on to Bae of the Week now.
Your Bae of the Week is?
Yeah. So my Bae of the Week is Shawnee Micheline Holloway, which is already a great name, right?
Yeah.
So she is a Chicago native and artist and sex educator. And basically she redesigned the strap-on, and her design is called Strap with two P's. I don't know the significance of the second P, but I think it looks pretty cool, and I think she looks pretty good, so she's my Bae of the Week. So she was actually working at a sex shop since she was 18 years old. I don't know when she stopped working or if she still does, but this is what she had to say about working in it. She said, "I just continuously saw a lot of shame in that corner, like in the strap-on section of the shop." And this is an article in Broadly, which I'll link in the description of this episode, but she continues, "Whether that's because heterosexual couples were fearing that they were doing something gay." It just reminds me of niggas and how much I
just like
that shit is gay. That shit is gay. Just hate you all.
Or better.
Exactly. Or masculine women feeling shameful about the fact that they have to put on a thing at all, or people of color who came in and didn't see themselves reflected in the things we have. So that put the battery in her back to make something else that was accessible both in a shape and size and what it looks like to all people. So she designed the strap, which has a high V waistline, and it looks super cute. She says she chose that design to be in line with the current high-waisted fashion trends and also be shape-affirming and create a secure fit on a range of different body sizes. So she says that all of the straps have self-containing mechanisms, so there's nothing hanging off or flapping around or chafing the skin because it's tucked in. And then there's strategic buckles that aim to make it easy to put on, and also the design is mesh and fabric, so that means that it can be put in the washing machine.
Nice.
And her plan is to make it from sizes double extra small to triple extra large, which is a wide fucking range.
It is.
Of sizes.
And I love like the way it looks, because when I just so you guys know, I was looking for a strap on because I was like, oh, you know, yeah. I'm out here
trying to do some gay
shit. I'm trying to do some gay shit. OD. And
nice.
I was looking at them and they are really bulky. There's different, like a harness, and there's different shapes, but they're all, they boil down to being bulky, and most of the time they can be uncomfortable. Mm-hmm. So when I was looking at it, I was like, oh, maybe I should just like jump ahead of the curve and just be the one with this, and like anybody who I pull it out on, they're gonna be like, okay,
ooh, la, la.
I hope she knows what she's
Where'd
doing
you I'm get like, your yeah. strap ma
yeah, but it's really nice, like it's very streamlined. That's what I like about it.
It's super cute. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and then her plan is to make it super expensive at first to pay to make it less expensive in the future. Mm. So the people who can actually afford the high price point are eventually going to pay for people who can't, which is socialism, my friends.
Yes. Now we're on to hoe of the week.
Yes. All right. So the hoes this week are Alex Demo, who donated a pretty penny to us and also has helped us out in many ways. You know, he has done sex trivia with us and he's been on the show in the past. So thank you very much, Alex. Love ya. And then also Melissa D and Hillary H, who bought merchandise this week.
Yay.
And I wanted to do a shout out that I was meaning to do a couple of episodes ago, but last episode I was having a mental breakdown, and then previous episodes were recorded like a year ago. So now's the time to plug this. I want to shout out Molly Schwartz, who is the host and producer of Preserve This Podcast, which is a podcast literally about preserving podcasts, why it's important and how to do so. Like, I don't know if any of you people listen, any of you people, you motherfuckers,
y'all,
if anybody listening like deals with digital, I mean, we all actually deal with digital content at this point, unless you're my dad, because he thinks it's the devil a little bit.
But shout out to your dad.
To Mr. Sam's dad. But yeah, so like, even though it's digital, it's fragile in different sorts of ways. Like, who knows what's going to happen with the cloud, or if you don't upload your shit to something, or if you don't back up your shit, mm-hmm. or the deterioration of actual files, like sound files do deteriorate.
Wow.
And they get corrupt sometimes too. So yeah, Molly's doing something super cool. And then she also did something super cool by inviting me to do the panel at the launch party for this podcast. So I wanted to say thank you to Molly. She also has donated to this show. So yeah, if
thank
that's...
you, Molly.
Yes. If that's something that you're interested in, I would tell you to take a listen to Preserve This Podcast, and I'll put that in the description of this episode. I also wanted to shout out Iman S., who mad years ago, me and Iman went to Brazil together.
Nice.
And it was fucking lit. Yeah, she's also a Hunter College alum, and now she does her own podcast in addition to being a very prolific writer. And a couple of weeks ago, I was on, maybe like a month ago, I was on her podcast called How'd You Meet, which is generally about like how two people met. Mm-hmm. But they did a special episode about the show Dating Around on Netflix. Did you watch it?
No.
It's fucking funny.
Is it?
Yeah, it's just like one person, and it shows them going on dates with several people, but it's really aesthetically pleasing. So like all the dates aren't on the same day, but they have the person wear the exact same outfit.
Nice.
So it like seamlessly cuts and stuff like that. And we just talked about the show. I was on with two other writers who are really dope, as well as Iman's co-host, who is also dope. And I'll put that in the description of this episode if you would like to take a listen. One more thing I'm going to put in the description of this episode, even though I talked about it already, is my panel from South by Southwest with Queen from Tea with Queen and Jay, Barry from Podcast in Color, and Landy Watley, who is a PhD candidate at Howard University, because I think it was a good panel and that people should motherfucking listen to it. So yeah, those are the hoes of the week. Let's go on to self-care tip of the week. I wrote, I don't know,
do your taxes.
Do your taxes? I don't know.
There's a deadline, people.
There is a deadline and it's coming up, you know?
Yeah. At least, do my taxes in January.
Yeah, that's because you're getting something back now.
Yeah.
Not all people do that.
That's a fact.
Not all people do that. I was reading an article that was like, this year, more people than ever are going to ask for an extension. Because it's like more confusing this year because like certain
There's
tax
a whole bunch
laws
of,
have
like,
changed.
Hoops. Yeah.
Yeah. So just a gentle reminder. Sorry. I know you probably didn't want to hear that. But at the time that this is coming out,
you might need to do it.
Yeah, you got like 5 days left, so do that. And then also schedule therapy when you're on an uptick, because when you're on a downtick, you're not trying to do that shit because it fucking sucks and you're not trying to think about that. But today I was on Instagram and I saw a post that got on my nerves and I was like, where do I put this? Like, you don't want to hop in the group chat like, damn, shit is dumb every fucking day.
Yeah.
And you don't want to like bother the nigga that you're fucking with that shit all the time. You don't want to walk up to your dad because he doesn't know what you're talking about. There's just like, I was like, I need an outlet. I need a motherfucker. And then I realized, you know, insurance covers that. So
therapy.
Yeah. Like, I'm not in a terrible spot, but I could use a little work. Oh, yeah. Specifically, I was thinking I need to leave this country. Like, not this earth or anything like that. Like, it wasn't anything that serious. But I was like, I need to leave this country. Maybe I should talk to somebody about that. Yeah. So schedule therapy when you're on a motherfucking uptick.
Because I know for me personally, it's like when you need it the most, you're just like desperate and you're like, I can't do anything right, including scheduling therapy. So it's like, everything, don't do it then. Don't do it when you need it.
Yeah.
Have it.
Yeah. It's like a rainy day funds or whatever. Yeah. Or just like having all your situations in place for the disaster that comes.
Yes.
That kind of thing.
Exactly.
Yeah. Ho, 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 ho. Ho, 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 ho. Ho, 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 ho. Are you a fan of sex, fun, drinks, prizes, games, music, and twerking? Of course you are. So if you're in or around New York City this month, you should definitely come through to Sex Trivia Sundays hosted by Innerho Uprising. This month's edition will be Sunday, April 14th, starting at a new time, 5 p.m., and ending at our regular time, 8 p.m. An extra hour of fun with your favorite hoes. Winners and runners-up get a prize, so come to compete or to spectate. Either way, entry is free. You can find information on how to register for yourself or your team to compete in the description of this episode. And this month, because we'll be playing the same day that the 8th and final season of one of my favorite shows, Game of Thrones, airs, you can stick around after Sex Trivia to watch the show with us at Love Story, the bar where we do Sex Trivia Sundays at. May 11th, the third Pod in Live NYC. The largest People of Color podcasters meetup in the tri-state area and potentially the country and potentially the entire solar system. Our friends over at Tea with Queen and Jay create a free safe space every year for People of Color podcasters, podcast enthusiasts, and podcast listeners to all come kick it with each other over drinks, music, and fun. Innerho Uprising will be there. Our homie podcasters like Bag Ladies and Queer Walk will be there, so save the date. More details on that coming soon. Pay a ho. If you love, love, love this show and appreciate the hard work that we do to bring it to you every week, we would so greatly appreciate it if you supported us monetarily and non-monetarily. To support us monetarily, we ask you to visit innerhouseuprising.com and choose the Pay a Ho Once or Pay a Ho Monthly options. Pay a Ho Once redirects you to our PayPal where you can drop off any one-time donation at any amount that you want as many times as you want. So that takes you to paypal.me/innerho. It's kind of like we're fuck buddies and we just call each other up when we want to satisfy that itch. If you choose the Pay a Ho Monthly option, you'll be redirected to our Patreon, which is patreon.com/innerhouseuprising. On Patreon, you'll be given the option of setting a monthly recurring donation at any price that you want, and we'll return the favor with some monthly goodies, like we're in a committed relationship and we have some expectations for one another. So if you donate $2 or more a month, you get early and discounted access to Innerho Uprising events. And if you donate $5 or more a month, you get, fuck that, a regular Innerho Uprising newsletter curated by yours truly. It's fun, it's insightful, it's filled with offbeat stories about sex, love, and dating that you may have missed in the current drudgery of the news cycle. If you're strapped for cash or don't wish to support us monetarily, then there are other ways to help us out. You can leave an Apple Podcast review or a Stitcher review. You can comment on one of our episodes on SoundCloud or CastBox or Himalaya. You can tweet about us and tag us on Twitter or Instagram. You can reply to Twitter threads asking what your favorite podcasts are with our @. You can drop a link to your favorite Innerho Uprising episode in your group chat. You can tell your work best friend to give us a listen. Or you can walk down the street rocking some Innerho Uprising merchandise, which you can find on innerhouseuprising.com/merchandise. Now, let's get into this motherfucking show. All right. Now we're going to get into the actual show with a segment we like to call
Fuck It,
which is the topic of the day. Today we're speaking with Rukaya.
Rukaya, pronouns she and her, is a London-based writer and sexual health activist who is living with the chronic STI herpes. Rukaya's writing includes sexual health, sex positivity, and feminism. She aims to use her personal experience and perspective to set the record straight about STIs and thus change the way we think and talk about sexually transmitted infections.
Welcome, Rukaya.
Hello. Hey, thank you for having me.
All the way from London.
Yes, London.
We love your accent. I mean, I'm not even trying to stand right now, but...
I love New York accents. Yeah. They're like...
Oh, thanks.
New York accents are like my favorite, like, American accents. They're probably like the only few that I like.
Wow. I've never heard anyone say that before.
I'm like blushing. I don't know why. I'm just mad excited. I'm like, thank you.
All right, cool. Let's hop into things.
So to first start off, can you tell us the difference between herpes viruses HSV-1 and HSV-2?
So HSV-1 is typically people get that orally. So it's something that you'll get around your lips, but you can pass on HSV-1 to the genitals. And HSV-2 is genital herpes. It seems to only like the genital area, so it's very, very rare that you can pass on HSV-2 onto somebody orally. So what I have is HSV-2.
And if you feel comfortable sharing, how did you contract HSV-2?
To be honest, I don't even know, because I had a lot of sexual partners, so it really could have been anyone. And that summer, I remember summer 2015, like... I was literally living my best life. So in terms of like sex, so I had different casual partners, but then I had four people that I was seeing around the same time. So it probably was one of them. It was one of them, I think. Yeah. And that was in 2015. So it's been almost 4 years.
And what led to your diagnosis? Like, what made you go and get checked out, if you even went there with that intention?
Because after I had sex with one guy, I was like, I didn't know it was blisters, but I had some bumps around my genital area, and I was like, oh, this is really painful. I need to go to the clinic and get checked out. So when I went to the clinic, the nurse told me that it's nothing to worry about. It's probably just an ingrown hair or something. And I was like, oh, okay, cool. And then when my results came back, it said that how I have HSV-2. So I was like, oh, my God. So, yeah, it was just because I had symptoms. Because you really can't get tested for herpes unless you have symptoms. Because most people carry it, but it's a dormant virus. So you don't get tested for it unless you're showing up with symptoms.
So what is the nature of the test? Do they, like, swab the area where you think might be, like, an outbreak or something?
They swab the area, because it's a skin condition. That's the thing. A lot of people get it misconstrued as well, because people think that you can pass it on via your bodily fluids, like, you know, when you're having sex, semen, vaginal fluids, but you can't pass it on like that. It's when somebody's having an outbreak and that area touches another person's skin and that person can get onto their skin. So they'll culture that area. They'll take swabs of like the blisters and then see what could be under the microscope.
How old were you at the time that you were diagnosed?
I was 21. Yeah, I was 21.
And like you did say briefly that obviously you were like, oh my God, but what were your initial feelings like after you found out? Did you feel comfortable telling your family and friends? What were their reactions if you did tell them?
No, I think I only told one friend and that was it. But I was very, I put it to the back of my mind. I didn't want to come to terms that I had something that I can't get rid of. So I just went on about my normal business, carried on having sex. And then I was getting a lot of outbreaks. I still get outbreaks like monthly. I think my period triggers it, but I take medication for it. But at that time, I was getting it like once every 2 weeks or like once every month. So I had to go back to the clinic, and then they referred me to a doctor who specializes in like STIs and stuff. And he gave me medication to suppress it. And also he told me that Because I remember around the time, because after I got diagnosed, I continued on as normal. And I remember asking him, this was in 2016, when I met my ex, I asked him also, do I need to tell anyone that I have herpes or not? Like anyone that I'm seeing? And he was like, if they're just casual partners or it's not really serious, then you don't need to tell anyone. And that was basically it. So I just kind of ran with that. And I was just like, well, I don't need to tell anyone. So if I continue to have casual sex, or if I continue to just see people who I'm not interested in like that, I don't have to disclose. And so I just ignored it. I pretended it wasn't there. The only partner that I ever told was my ex. So yeah, I just ran along with that kind of mentality.
What was his the doctor's reasoning for telling you that? Was it like a transmission, or I guess passing on the virus onto someone else was low if you were being treated for it, so there was no point in telling anyone?
Yeah, that's how it is here in the UK. Like when it comes to herpes, like typically, well, the NHS says that you don't really need to disclose to your partners if you're not having an active outbreak, because if you're taking medication alone, it puts down your transmission rate to, I think it's like 2% or something. If you're using condoms and you're on medication, it's 2% to pass it along to someone. And
Yeah,
it's very low, because it's the only time that you're really going to be contagious, if that's even a good word to use, is when your outbreaks are active. If you have an outbreak, for sure, if you have sex with somebody else, they're going to contract it from you. But if you're not having an outbreak and you're not asymptomatically shedding the virus, then you're fine. There's a very low risk of you passing it on. And because the reason why he said that as well is because the percentage of people who have herpes in the world is, I think it's either 80 or 90%. It's really high. And the reason why it's so common is because people are literally passing it on, and they don't know that they have herpes. The only reason why I know that I have herpes is because I have symptoms. But most people who have herpes don't have symptoms. So they don't think it's important to really, that's why you don't get tested for herpes when you go to the clinic. You only get the standard test, as syphilis, HIV, gonorrhea, and chlamydia. You don't get tested for herpes. You don't get tested for genital warts, because these are things that they feel are only a problem when you get symptoms. If you don't have symptoms, it's just going to be there. So why do you need to get tested for it, I guess? So that's why he told me that. And he's not the only doctor or, you know, medical person that I've heard say that over here. Quite a lot of people have said it. And I even had a friend that tried to get a herpes test at the clinic here in London, and they refused to test her. She didn't have any symptoms or anything, but they just refused to test her.
And is that something that you still follow? I know that you had said that up until then, the only person who you told was your ex. Do you still not tell people?
No, not anymore. I've been celibate for over a year. I've been celibate for like a year and like 3 months. So I haven't... There's only been one situation recently where I met a guy after a party and I told him I have herpes, and then he left. But that's been the only time that I've ever had to tell people. And then because I only started, you know, becoming some sort of like advocate for sexual health and just sex positivity as a whole roughly around the time that I became celibate, like just before that. Around that time, that's when I started to do more research on herpes and just STIs in general. And I made the decision within myself that I actually want to disclose to every person who could be a potential partner. It's just my own personal decision. And maybe because I was leaving, you know, the whole casual sex thing, I felt like, okay, I need to disclose to every partner. But I think it's down to each individual, because the lines become blurred. If you're having casual sex, if you're just seeing someone, you're only going to have sex with them once, and then that's going to be the end of it. You know, when does it become a right time to disclose to someone else? So that's why I feel like it's down to the individual. If you're choosing to go into casual sex, it really is up to you. I prefer to disclose now, but it really is up to you as to what you want to do. And I guess if you're not having casual sex and you're doing the whole serious thing, or you have a boyfriend, a girlfriend, whatever it is, I think it is very important to disclose to others. But my all my friends know, my mom, my brother knows, so it's not something that I'm ashamed of anymore. I'm very happy to say the word out loud. Like before, I was so scared to say the word herpes, but now it's just a normal thing. It's just, yeah.
And just to backtrack a little bit, because you did mention that you're celibate, could you tell us a little bit about your celibacy journey, and did your status play any part in your decision to be celibate?
Yeah, I felt like with celibacy, because I became celibate in January 2018, so the decision came from, I just felt like I need a break yeah. from men.
Oh, yes.
Do you only date men?
Yes, yes.
Gotcha. You do need a break sometimes.
So I just felt like I needed a break from them. And I just felt like I was giving up so much of my energy I just felt like I was having so much sex. And it was just, you know, when you spend your spare time, like, entertaining other people, and it's draining, like,
yeah.
energy-wise, is really, really draining. And so I just thought to myself, I need to have a break. I need to just focus on me and just find other things to do. Eventually, I decided to go celibate, and the journey's been great. I feel liberated, sexually. This is my own form of sexual liberation. Before, I felt like having casual sex and stuff like that was sexually liberating, and it was. But I feel like being celibate and just keeping myself to myself is even more liberating. And I feel like if I didn't become celibate, I wouldn't be doing what I'm doing now. I definitely feel as if I've figured out my passions, what I'm into, what I like and stuff. And yeah, it's been an interesting journey.
So you said you wouldn't be doing what you're doing now. Is that when you became an activist? Is that what you mean by doing now?
Yeah.
Okay. So how did your journey as an activist start?
I wouldn't even call myself an activist, because I feel like an activist is like, there's a lot of responsibility that comes with being an activist. I feel like to be an activist, you really need to put in the work. You need to be at the front line. I feel like that word is used so loosely these days in terms of like people who are doing like different social justice type of work. I feel like that word activist is used so loosely. And I feel like what I would say is that I'm more of like an advocate and just somebody who's just trying to raise more awareness. And how that came about is, I don't know, I went to an event. I forgot the name of the event anytime I say this, but you had to go on stage for like 2 minutes and just pitch something or just talk about something. So I went on the stage and I just said, I have herpes. And then like everyone was like quiet, and then somebody was like, oh, I have herpes too. And then somebody else was like, I have herpes too. And then I just talked about my experience on the stage. And then afterwards, I wrote an article for this brand called LAPP, and they posted it on their website and stuff. And that was how I got into just speaking about my experience openly. And it just kind of, I don't know, it just, everything just kind of happened organically. And I used like my social media, especially, to just speak about my experience.
For those of us who don't know, what is LAPP? Because you said that's how you got your start afterwards.
It's the model, Leomi Anderson, the British model. She has like her own clothing brand. And it's like a feminist kind of like clothing brand. And they have their own online blog, and people submit articles and stuff like that. Well, women submit articles about different like subjects like politics or like fashion and just what's going on, just in terms of like what's going on in the media and stuff like that, and just giving their own opinion on things. So they were doing like a competition, like where somebody has to submit an article, and then I submitted my herpes article, and then it won the competition. So that's just kind of like how it started. And I've just since then, yeah, it's just happened organically. I just went on social media and I just started writing about my experiences and just trying to educate others as I was educating myself. And then people would invite me, just like how you guys have invited me onto this podcast, like people invite me onto podcasts or to come speak at events or to be a part of a panel or workshops, just different things. It's just been very organic. Yeah.
Cool. Since we're clarifying things, I just want to say that the NHS is, I'm assuming it's similar to the NHI here, like the Health Society in England or something like that.
Oh, yeah. National Health Service. Yeah.
Okay. National Health Service. Gotcha. Thank you. Just to clarify from a couple of questions back. But cool. I think it's so dope what you're doing. And it kind of seems like I kind of want to get to like where it was. That like the moment where it clicked in your head where you were just like, I'm going to go on stage and like let everyone know this? Was it like you were feeling kind of like burdened by it or scared?
Yeah.
Or
what made you just say, hi, everyone, I have herpes?
Yeah.
I know. I know. That's exactly what it was. Like, I definitely felt at that point, it was something that I just felt so ashamed of. Like, I felt so ashamed. Like, to even say the word herpes to my friends, like, it was such an issue. And then I was with my friend at the time. We're not friends anymore, but we were friends then. And she's the one that said, oh, you know, why don't you go on stage and just talk about your experience with herpes and stuff? And I was like, oh, my God, like, I don't know if I can do that. But then I just thought, you know what, fuck it. It is what it is at the end of the day. So, and then when I went on there, it turned out to be the best thing ever because two women in that state, in that audience, literally screamed, like, I have herpes too. And so it was liberating. It definitely was liberating. And it kind of, like, put the weight off of my shoulders because I realized you've been making such a big deal out of nothing. Like, it really wasn't as serious as you thought it was. Like, it really isn't the end of the world. You have herpes, so what? Like, carry on doing what you're doing. Do you know what I mean? That's the moment that I realized that I can really, like, this really isn't anything, and I need to let other people know that it really isn't anything. And it made me realize how misinformed people are and how much stigma there is. And that's just like my goal. I just need to break that stigma.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Can you talk a little bit about like where this herpes stigma comes from? Because like when I think about herpes, having like learned more about it, it's just like a sexually transmitted eczema to me.
Yeah.
Like it's just not that, it's literally not that fucking serious.
Yeah.
And like when you compare it to other STIs and stuff, obviously there should be no stigma in regards to like a condition that someone has, but this is like, is literally not, yes, like it's not life threatening at all. It's kind of just like a nuisance. And yeah, there's like this whole like, oh my God, herpes. Like, can you talk about why you think that even exists?
Yeah, I think it's because it's permanent. It's permanent. It's incurable. And when people hear that, they're like, oh my God, like I can't get rid of it. Oh my God. But at the same time, the reason why people make herpes jokes and stuff like that is because, let's be real, like people wouldn't joke about HIV. Like they wouldn't make jokes about HIV, but they'll make jokes about herpes because it's like it's permanent, but you know, all you get is like cold sores and like blisters and stuff. So, and I feel as if the stigma comes from also how we've been taught sexual health and STIs. Like for the longest time, I feel like, you know, not just here in the UK, in the US, the governments, they tend to use scare tactics to get people to look after their sexual health. You know, if you look at propaganda from even like World War II times, if you look at the posters that they were using to raise awareness on syphilis for soldiers, it was very scary. Or even if you look at the AIDS like epidemic in the 80s, it was, people saw it as like this gay disease, which is just ridiculous. And, you know, people thought it was this thing that would just kill you. And the way, and if you look at posters from those days, it was really scary. Like if I saw any of those posters now talking about, say, for example, a new STI came out, I'd be afraid. I'd think this thing is horrible. And anyone who gets it is just literally tainted. And I feel like because of those scare tactics that have been used to warn people about STIs, it's done more harm than good. Like with herpes, no one's really afraid of the the virus itself, because for the most part, you don't, I'm just one of the people who's just unfortunate to get symptoms like as much as I get them. But most people who even have symptoms, they don't have it as often as I have it. So the fear is not of herpes itself. It's not going to do anything to you. It's not going to kill you. It's nothing like that. The fear is of the stigma. It's what people are going to say about you, how people are going to view you, this whole thing about being unclean when you have an STI, all these other things. And the fact that even when it comes to sex alone, like, everyone's having sex, but for some reason, it's still a taboo to talk about it. It's still a taboo to discuss it. And I don't understand why that is, but I feel like that's where the stigma comes from. It's all those different things.
This is kind of like a comment more than a question, and it's kind of half-assed because I'm figuring it out in my head as I go. But there seems to be, like, people are more okay with having sex without a conversation about any sort of, like, what STI someone might have. Like, they're more okay with that than someone who has herpes, for example, and is like, I have herpes. I'm not facing an outbreak right now, but I do have it.
Yeah, exactly. Like, there's been so many instances where I'm literally about to have sex with someone, and I'm like, are you not gonna put on a condom? And then they're like, oh, why? Do you have something? And I'm just like, what the hell?
It's just backwards. It's not logical, right?
Exactly. It's like, you've literally just met me. We haven't even discussed anything when it comes to our statuses. And I asked you to put on a condom, and you're asking me if I've got something. So, number one, like, I could easily say I don't have something, and, you know, we can carry on not using a condom. And that's going to put your life, that's going to put your health at risk. It's like, oh, it's just so backwards. Like, people just, when it comes to sexual health, I just feel like people just, they're not really aware. I think people are pretty ignorant when it comes to their sexual health. It's just like, yeah, whatever kind of thing.
Yeah, there's kind of like this out of sight, out of mind kind of thing. Like, where people, like, just don't get tested for their own personal well-being.
I know we're laughing, but it's kind of just like, what? Like, yeah, why aren't you doing these things?
It's a bit ridiculous. It's a bit ridiculous. Yeah, we're all ass backwards out here. Do you think that, I know that you're celibate right now, if you ever do start having sex again, do you think that a part of your, I know you don't like the term activism, but a part of the work that you're doing is telling all your sexual partners that you have HSV2? Is that, like, slowly breaking down stigma one partner at a time?
Yes, it is. That's the reason why my view towards disclosure changed, because I realized I actually do have to tell everyone, because that's how I'm helping towards breaking the stigma and creating conversations. I actually feel like it's my duty to disclose. Even though I say, like, it's down to the individual, I feel like, because of the work that I do, I feel like it's actually imperative that I disclose to a partner, because I feel like it does definitely help towards breaking down the stigmas, because number one, it lets me know whether this person's worth my time or not. Mm. And number two, once I say that, if the person is interested in going further, then they're now going to ask me questions. Okay, so what does this mean for me and you? What exactly is it? And, you know, it opens up that kind of conversation, that kind of dialogue. So even if that person was to move on and meet other people, at least they're more informed now, and they're less likely to stigmatize herpes and stuff like that, and to have a better understanding. So, yeah, definitely.
Do you ever feel scared that, like, no one will ever want to date you? Which is obviously not true, but does that fear ever run across your mind?
Yeah, I do. Yeah, it's such a relief that I'm even so open about having herpes, like, online, because it's like, if somebody meets me and then they find my Instagram, it's there, you know, it's there. But it does still worry me sometimes, like, having that disclosure talk or just telling someone about my situation and them just being like, you know what, sorry, like, you've explained it to me, I get it, but I don't want the risk, so sorry, bye. Like, that does really scare me. But I know that it won't, I don't think it will be that difficult to meet someone who just doesn't really care, because my ex, you know, he didn't really care about it. He was absolutely fine with it. And I know a lot of women who are in relationships right now and who have herpes, and their partners are just, yeah, it's whatever. So it does scare me, though. Sometimes I do get anxiety over that.
So I wanted to backtrack a little bit, because we mentioned earlier that most doctors in London don't actually even recommend that you tell anybody if it's a casual partner. But we just wanted to know, like, what were the conditions again? This is when you're on the medication, if you would be able to provide, like, what exactly is the perfect condition in which you're not really spreading it, so therefore you don't have to disclose it.
Yeah, the thing is, like, even when you have an outbreak, that's going to be your most contagious time. Like, even if you was, like, to touch your outbreak area, and then you also touch another part of your skin, you can pass it on to another area of your body. So you have to be very careful. So that's the most contagious part. And other than that, even if you don't have symptoms, there's what they call asymptomatic shedding. So if you're not on medication, the percentage of you having asymptomatic shedding is higher. So asymptomatic shedding is when the virus still sheds itself, but with no symptoms. So it's still present. And that happens, I think, I keep forgetting the percentages, but I think for people who have symptoms, I think it's like 10% or something. And for people who don't have symptoms, it's a bit less than that. So, and that's the reason why also it spreads so quickly. That's the reason why it's so common amongst everyone, because everyone is spreading it without any symptoms. So people who aren't on medication have to be aware of that as well, that even when they're not having symptoms, they can still potentially pass it on. But even though you can pass it on with no symptoms, that percentage is still low. So then, because you won't be put on medication unless your outbreaks is like more than 5 times a year. If it's less than 5 times a year, then the NHS doesn't really see any reason to give you medication. The medication is mainly just to manage it, because when you start to have frequent outbreaks, now it starts to become an inconvenience. If I was having like an outbreak once a year, I'd be like, you'd even forget that it's there. It's like, okay, yeah, I've got herpes, but there's nothing reminding you of it. You get an outbreak once a year, it's not really interfering with your life. So yeah, so the medication, like, it's mainly when it's becoming too much. So for people who aren't on it, who aren't getting outbreaks as often, I guess there's still not really an issue when it comes to passing it on.
And for you in particular, you mentioned an outbreak. Just to clarify, what are the symptoms of an outbreak and how long do they usually last? And it seems like you get them pretty frequently.
Everyone is like different, but mine is like really bad. I know when people think of herpes, they think of like multiple like clusters of blisters and stuff like that, but it's really not like that. Like for me, it's like pretty different. I get like one blister, like just one blister somewhere on my genitals, and it's really, really painful. And if I didn't take any medication, it would probably be there for like over a week. And the last one that I had was very, very bad. It was really painful, and I had a lot of flu symptoms. So my ears were hurting me, my throat was hurting me. I had body ache. I felt so weak. I had the chills, because it's a virus, and when it's triggered and it awakes from its slumber, or whatever you want to call it, the immune system reacts to that. And I guess that's how my immune system was reacting to it. It was like a faux flu. My immune system is fighting it, but really and truly, it's not going to leave. It's still going to be there, if that makes sense. So yeah, it was really bad. And sometimes I get nerve pain as well, because the virus itself, the reason why it's so hard to treat is because it hides in an inconspicuous place. It hides in your nervous system, like in your lower back. So that's where it's dormant in people's bodies. And so when it awakens, it travels through the nerve system. It travels through your nerve system, and that's how you tend to get nerve pain as well. So especially in the very beginning, I used to get like a lot of like nerve pain in my legs, just like a dull kind of like ache, like I was on my period. So that's usually how it feels. Sometimes it's just like a tingling sensation, and then that's it. But yeah, it depends on the person, because everyone's outbreaks would be pretty different. Yeah.
And for you personally, does it, I know you mentioned your period twice, does it like fluctuate with your menstrual cycle?
Yeah, for some reason, I think my periods trigger it. Every single time my period is over, I start to get the tingling sensation, which is letting me know that an outbreak is coming. I'm just like, oh, for fuck's sake. And it's literally every single period. It's literally every single period. So my medication now, my doctor told me to take it a few days, like maybe like 1 or 2 days before my my period starts. And then just maybe 1 or 2 days after it finishes. So just continue to take it just during my period and just right before and after it, just to kind of like manage it and see what happens. And last month, I didn't do that. So that's why the outbreak was so bad. Everyone has different triggers. Some people it's when they're stressed or when they haven't had that much sleep. Or even I heard people say that how when they eat nuts for some reason.
Human body is so weird.
Yeah, there's no rhyme or reason.
My period my period activates my gingivitis. I have gingivitis. So. That's why I floss so much.
Oh my God.
Periods, man. You mentioned your medications. Can you tell us a little bit about the medication? Like, are there side effects or anything like that? What medication are you on, if you feel comfortable?
I take Acyclovir, and that's like the one that I know that there's three different types. I don't really know the other two. I forgot the names of them, but the Acyclovir is the one that I take. Usually you take like two a day, and then it just helps to stop the herpes from waking up and get into the surface of the skin and manifesting itself there. So it just helps to manage it and basically suppress the herpes so you don't have any outbreaks. And when I first started taking it, because I was actually taking it, I had to take it every day when I first started it. I mean, now I don't take it every day, but I had to take it every day then. And it was really good. I never got any outbreaks. I only got out of 6 months, I got like one, but it wasn't even like it was just a bit of the tingling sensation that I felt, and then it just quickly disappeared after a day. So I was just like, oh. So when I took it every day, it's like I had virtually no outbreaks.
Can you tell us a little bit about your writing? You did mention that you ended up writing for LAPP. Do you still write regularly? And I've noticed that in your writing that you emphasize you're speaking from a heteronormative perspective. Why is that? Why do you feel like that's important to say?
Oh, yeah, because, other than herpes, sometimes I might talk about, like, sex and my experiences with sex. And I feel like sometimes it's important to let people know that I'm talking from an experience where it's been me and a man, because I know I'm aware that, like, a lot of the people who follow me aren't heterosexual. A lot of people have different sexualities and whatnot. So it's like, I need to let people know that when I'm speaking about this, it's literally from my own experience. And it's just it's also just to let people know that I'm aware that not everyone has the same experience as me, because we're all different and whatnot. So especially when I talk about maybe a situation with a guy or a partner, whatever it is, I have to let people know that this is the point of view that I'm speaking from.
Cool. Sorry, I'm gonna pronounce your name wrong.
Rukaya.
I was definitely gonna say Rukia. I'm
sorry. No, you said it right.
Could you if there are any last words that you would like to impart on our listeners, would you have anything to say?
Yeah, I would just say if you have herpes yourself, really isn't the end of the world. Trust me, so many people have it. You just need to, if you're having symptoms, just learn how to manage it, learn what your triggers are, and you know how to move on from there. And also do your research about not just herpes but just about STIs in general, and you know, realize that the stigmas do nothing when it comes to prevention and when it comes to lessening the amount of people who have STIs. All it does is just make things worse. Change your perspective on STIs. Follow people who speak about their own experience when it comes to HIV or like herpes and stuff, and just learn about these things and just educate yourself, because the more people who are educated on these things and who are aware on these things, the more likely prevention will be will be effective. So yeah, just don't be an ignorant little shit. Just get clued up.
Yeah. Don't be an asshole about it, guys.
Don't be an asshole. Seriously.
For people who want to follow your work and your writing on the internet, where can they find you?
They can find me on Instagram. So double underscore, so two underscores, and then Rukaya, R-U-K-I-A-T. And if you DM me as well, I can tell you some people to follow who also have herpes as well, and they're women as well.
So all of that will be in the description of this episode. Thank you so much for spending a bit of your lovely Sunday with us.
Thank you for having me, honestly. Thank you for even providing the space to speak about this, because there's such a stigma. And I noticed that in the US there's a huge herpes stigma from the Usher situation.
Yeah.
Oh, the Usher situation. Yeah. Oh yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a bit ridiculous. I definitely was as a younger person, I was scared of herpes for all of the reasons. And now I'm just like, are you kidding me?
It's literally the propaganda of just like showing pictures, and it's like, you can get this,
but like people are never gonna stop having sex, so it's just like we're in this weird cognitive dissonant space. Yeah, it's pretty bad.
Yeah, exactly. And it's just, and I don't know, I think that all those celebrities, well, I know it was Usher and YBA Youngboy that had herpes, and people were just making a big deal out of it, and I was just like, oh my god, like the stigma there is even worse. Yeah. And people were saying, let it burn. And I just thought to myself, number one, like, herpes actually doesn't burn. You're talking about chlamydia and gonorrhea. Like, at least, like,
that's a good fucking point.
Exactly. Yeah. I was like, it doesn't even burn. Like, what are you guys talking about? That's how you know people are so misinformed. Like, you don't even know what symptoms it is for what. Like, oh. I was just like, oh, my God.
I'm so glad you said that. I got to pull that out of my thing the next time. Oh, here's a question I had, if you don't mind going on for a little bit longer. But like when you're in conversation and people say like really, like really weird, ignorant stuff about herpes, are you ever in those positions? And do you like break it down immediately, like you're wrong, or you're propagating stigma, which leads to people like not wanting to get checked out and stuff like that? Like, do you shut people down in real life?
Yeah, I actually try my best to shut people down. But then I'm a bit, because I remember at work one time, like behind me on the desks behind me, they were talking. They were like, oh, yeah, the mouth herpes, that's fine. It's the general herpes that you don't want to get. And I really wanted to intervene and be like, you can still get oral herpes and on your genitals. There's not really much of a difference. But in that situation, I couldn't interject. But then there's been times where people have spoken about it around me, and I've just had to be like, that's not how it works. But I don't also want to let these people know that the reason why I'm interjecting is because I have herpes. Because it's not every single time that you meet someone that you have to be like, yeah, I've got herpes. Do you know what I mean? So there's a fine line. I have to.
Yeah. And that could be unsafe. Like if you're at work or something like that, who knows who's going to use whatever information to.
People at work don't need to know. I know that I'm like really open about it, but they still don't need to know at work. So I've had to, sometimes I do shut people down, and sometimes I just have to kind of like walk away or just ignore it, because I feel like sometimes I might give myself away, or it's, you know what I mean? I don't want to be that person that has to always shut people down, but I have been in that situation multiple times.
You definitely, as the person with the actual diagnosis, you shouldn't be that person.
Not at all.
It should be the people who don't have herpes, or at least symptomatic herpes, since we all have herpes, who should just be like, no, shut the fuck up. And I'm so excited to be that person. You have put the battery in my back after this episode, because I love to make people feel stupid.
Like, literally, like when people talk about it as well, it's just so, it's from such an ignorant place. It's like, you don't know shit. You really don't know shit. Ugh.
Yeah. Especially on Twitter. Oh my God.
Oh my gosh. It's just on Twitter. Look everywhere, honestly. But yeah. Twitter is so conjugated that you're just like, oh my God, it's everyone.
Yeah. Twitter and probably like a 12th grade classroom would probably be like the two worst.
Yeah.
A 12th grade classroom is the worst place on the planet, no matter what.
That and a frat house. Those three things, probably like the worst herpes conversations.
I know that. I don't know if you guys have ever been on UK Black Twitter, because there's a different,
Is there? I think I've like seen a bit of it, but I don't think I've been fully immersed. What's the difference?
I think it's just like in terms of like the culture and stuff, like, or like maybe what people be talking about.
Thank you so much.
Yeah. For all of your insight and your UK, your Black UK Twitter insight also. I gotta delve into that space now.
Yeah.
I'm going to spend the rest of my year just doing different Black Twitters. Jamaican Black Twitter is an interesting
thing. Oh, yes. Jamaican Black Twitter is lit, isn't it?
I want that.
Oh, Jamaican Black Twitter is lit. And it's the same thing with I've noticed Nigerian Black Twitter as well, because I'm Nigerian. Yeah. Sometimes I see it. Sometimes it lands on my timeline and I'm like, oh, it's lit. It's lit on this side.
It's always fun. We all link up. We're all in the same place. The African diaspora. Great episode.
That was great.
Yeah.
So we mentioned earlier some fast facts, some fun facts. We're going to give fast you guys a little fun. More.
Yeah.
Because the spirit of this interview was definitely making sure we're informed.
Yes.
And how can you be informed if we don't tell you?
Yeah.
We
tell we're you. The only. Google doesn't exist.
No. This the only source of information is Interhole Uprising.
These, could you imagine? That'd be a sick world. Not a bad one. Just kind of weird.
Yeah.
Like a lot of facts about Pornhub.
Yeah.
For
a
no
lot
reason.
Of just things that like, while in casual conversation is great, but like as the only source of information, I don't know.
In practicality,
practicality.
In real life, like, how do I make food?
Nope.
I have a HelloFresh code for that. Like, that's what it would be.
Yes.
I have nothing else.
Nothing else.
Let this be your toolkit for when people say dumb shit about herpes, though.
Yes, yeah. Exactly. Yeah. So we mentioned before, 90% of people worldwide and nearly 75% of the U.S. population currently host at least one herpes virus.
Oh, so, I just realized I said at least one. That's cool.
At least
niggas could have like six up in there.
Yeah, so there's actually 9 types of human herpes viruses.
Mm.
One that most people are familiar with, yes. Which is like, oh, that doesn't make any sense, but it does.
Yeah.
Chickenpox.
Yeah.
Chickenpox is caused by a herpes virus, yes. One of the 9. So nearly everybody gets at least 2 to 3 different herpes viruses before they even acquire HSV 1 or 2, because that's what they are. And over 80% don't show symptoms of any kind.
Wow.
So most of the time, if they don't show symptoms, they are just carriers. So they could just end up giving it to another person and that person has an outbreak.
Mm-hmm.
It's no guarantee that you will be one of the people who gets an outbreak, but you also, you know, you have a 90%, not 90% chance. You pretty much have a one in.
You're gonna get it.
Actually, there's no like rhyme or reason of the people who get the outbreaks or not. It's just like either it flares up or it doesn't.
Mm-hmm.
But one quote that I found very interesting was from C.R. Fauchild. I hope I'm pronouncing that right. He's the founder of Project Accept.
Mm-hmm.
Project Accept is also another project where they're trying to educate people so that there's less of a stigma around STIs.
Cool.
And he said, expecting to live a normal human life without acquiring HSV is about as irrational as expecting to have a normal sex life without losing your virginity. 90% of humanity carries at least one herpes simplex virus. Ultimately, what hurts people is that they don't know this.
Mm.
I mean, come on. It's like one of those things where it's
niggas.
Like, yeah, you probably already have it. You're scared, but you probably already have it.
Gang, 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 gang.
Yeah.
That's
yeah.
cool.
And I think, like, again, I'm always very grateful to be on this podcast because it's nice that people can listen in and just, like, not be dumb anymore about at least one thing.
Yeah. You're definitely going to be dumb about some
yeah,
other
OD.
Stuff. Yeah. I got to stop saying dumb, especially because this is Ability April.
Sorry.
And that's wild ableist.
Sorry. I'm sorry. See, and like, just let it be known that I'm like not perfect. I know you guys all thought I was, but
mine's
obviously
blown.
That's something that I cannot use anymore. Yeah.
Yeah.
Not cool, be misinformed man. Or
yes.
ignorant.
Yes. Those are good terms. Those are good terms. Cool, man. I think that was a good episode.
Yeah. I think so too.
Dope.
For sure.
Thank you for all that.
So if you would like to follow us on social media, you could do so at Interhole Uprising without the G on Twitter and Interhole Uprising with the G on Instagram and Facebook. InterholeUprising.com. Check it out to pay a hoe or check out merchandise. And if you'd like to follow me specifically, I am the Darkest Timeline.
Yeah.
both on Instagram and in real life. I am the actual Darkest Timeline. And on Twitter, I'm Rebby or Not. I'm never on Twitter, but people keep following me and keep adding me. So I'm like, hey.
They're trying to talk to you.
I know. One day, I'll just be like a fucking cool ass black person on Twitter. But today is not that day.
That's fine. You can follow me at SlamRid on Instagram and Twitter. I don't use Twitter very often, but I go on it sometimes. And nobody says anything to me. So I just go off. Yeah, I'm a lurker in real life too. And you can find my travel and food photos at Carmen Sam Diego on Instagram. That's it, everyone.
Bye.
Have a great day.